Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitler, along with Luke Mathers. Mark Jacobs standing by to join us as well to talk about some of this week's headlines. Before we do, I wanted to point out Christina Lorie was going to join us today. She's under the weather, but I did want to call attention to a story that she worked on for us. And it's the Girl Scout cookie graveyard. I never associated Girl Scout cookies with a graveyard, but she does make note that there have been many varieties that were tried over the past, many years, and asks how many you've tried. She notes that the Girl Scouts unveiled their newest cookie, the Raspberry Rally. And, you know, there's some that are like there all the time. Thin Mints. Certainly for me, it's the whatever they're called now, Caramel Delights. They used to be called Samoas. And so she goes through some of these. Some were long before, you know, Luke's time, so he can't comment on them. There were Pixies that were rich, buttery coconut cookies. There were granola forget-me-nots back in the 70s when granola was basically on everything. They wrapped hot dogs in granola, whatever would work. In the 1980s, there were kookaburras, which were chocolate-covered Rice Krispies filled with caramels. So now we're getting, Luke, to your area. The Golden Yangles, which were nothing more than cheddar cheese crackers. So they didn't always do cookies.
I don't think I tried those.
Let's see. There were the Lemon Chalet creams in the early 90s.
Now you're in my era then.
Yeah. They did do oatmeal cookies called Snaps from 1994 to 97. There was an apple cinnamon cookie from 1997 to 2001. And I don't remember this one. Iced berry pinatas from 2003 to 2005. Fruity cookies with strawberry jelly, cinnamon crumbles, and a thick layer of frosting.
Ring those bell sound familiar. Yeah, my family was big in scouting. So me and both of my brothers are all Eagle Scouts, and my sister was in Girl Scouts all the way up to Gold Awards. So there was Boy Scout popcorn and Girl Scout cookies in our house pretty much nonstop throughout growing up. And that one does sound familiar.
Hold the phone. We have an Eagle Scout
every single day, every single day producing you.
An Eagle Scout right here producing this little humble radio show, said the guy who did not rise beyond second class, like in life, much less in scouting. I feel like I got past the
tenderfoot. I mean,
yes. Yeah. I got that going for me. So, well, belated congratulations on that. What was your project?
Thank you. There was a large portion of, there was a brand new soccer facility at one of the middle schools. Oak Creek is where I went and did all of my education throughout middle school to high school. And they put in a brand new soccer field at the Oak Creek East Middle School, which is where the high school team still played because it was brand new, state of the art. They didn't want us playing on the football field because the football boosters were like, no, soccer cleats are bad. They're different than football cleats.
Oh, whatever. We've learned about, you know, cheesing off the football team in our last
hour.
So.
Well, yeah, true. But I don't think there's any henchmen in the vicinity here. So there was a giant wetland, though, between the parking lot and the new soccer facility. And so for a lot of people, it was very difficult to go across that wetland, and so I created a bridge that had movable, adjustable posts in the middle so that it could be over the wetland, but not you can't dig or dredge or anything like that in Wisconsin wetlands, and therefore it was kind of a little of a science project to figure out how to make that work and keep the bridge level, but it was, I'm going to say, 32 or 36 feet across from one parking lot to the soccer facility.
This is where I'm going to fold Mark Jacob into the conversation, because he and I are of a generation that I know the Eagle Scout project back in the day would have been, instead, we go get some hazardous waste from the munitions plant and we fill in that wetland, which is, you know, what we did back in the day, Mark, right?
That's right. We're part of the system there. We weren't trying to reform anything, right? We were just trying to fill in the We were going to dig up the hazardous waste and sell it along with the Girl Scout cookies, probably.
You know, and to sell those cookies, we need more housing divisions. And so, well, let's get rid of these trees. And by the way, somebody take care of all those bald eagles. We don't need those around here anyway. It was just a different world back then. Mark, how are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. It's funny. The thing you mentioned about trees reminds me of, you know, how of what I'm calling the Republican assault on trees. You know, you have Madison Cawthorn beating up a tree. You remember in that yes, famous video? Right. And you have Herschel Walker saying we got plenty of trees and we don't need any more trees, and that's why actually dealing with climate change is bad. And here where I'm from, Chicago. You know, we have a right-wing columnist who I used to edit at the Chicago Tribune named John Cass. And when the Chicago Tribune, he's now disaffected from the Chicago Tribune because for some reason he got the biggest buyout in world history and it made him mad and he left the paper. But anyway, so he's become this right-wing propagandist, and the Chicago Tribune had a story of looking at where the city's planting its new trees. And sure enough, they're all in these affluent, you know, white areas, and they weren't planting very many trees in areas of color. And so what ended up happening is, so he ended up denouncing the article because he said there's no such thing as racist trees, and the article is ridiculous because it was accusing the trees of racism, which is not a very clear line of thinking.
No.
So I'm just wondering why Republicans hate trees these days. It doesn't make sense to me.
We'll have that, and we'll search for the answer to that and many questions with Mark Jacob coming up after this break as we look at the week's headlines. You're up north. We'll be right back.
Dennis playing by himself, man.
Welcome back. This is Up North News. On the show Monday, State Senator Jeff Smith of Eau Claire and State Senate candidate Kelly Westland running for a seat in Northwest Wisconsin. Joining us once again here, Mark Jacob, former editor at the Chicago Tribune and the Chicago Sun-Times. And as we look at the headlines for this week, obviously, last week I was making the case that the Inflation Reduction Act was actually the bigger story, even though more attention was being paid to ex-President Trump and the classified documents that he had, stolen away to Florida. I think this week now, while the student loan debt move is big, arguably the Trump case, where we're discovering even more classified information, was there, and the weird little legal twists and turns has no doubt been the bigger story. And I think that one of the things, Mark, that makes it big, as you were telling me earlier, is it's still rather puzzling in some ways how this is all being handled. We're expecting a redacted affidavit later this morning that might lay out some of the justification for the search warrants, but that court didn't have to order that. The whole thing's a little unusual.
No, they, in fact, I've watched a lot of these kind of investigations unfold over the years, and it's very unusual. I'm not quite sure what the point of doing it at this stage is. The deal is it's especially unusual when nobody's been charged with any crime whatsoever. And so why does the public need to see what the justification for it is? There's a regular process in which the prosecutors go in, convince a judge that, yes, there's reason to do a search, that they've tried other methods that those haven't worked and they need to do a search. And the judge has a very high standard for saying yes. And in this case, the judge said yes. And but of course, the funny thing, Pat, was that immediately the right wing is saying, well, show us the affidavit, show us the affidavit. And similar to other things that the right wing has tried to get, has demanded, they may be sorry that they demanded it. They may be in a situation where they wish they didn't demand it. But what I'm saying, so the thing about this is the Justice Department was ordered by the judge to come up with a redacted version of this affidavit that could possibly be released to the public, and did so. And yesterday the judge said that was acceptable and that it would be released today. But the Justice Department didn't really want to. I don't think they wanted to release anything. And because at this stage, why would they? Because they're conducting an investigation. They haven't finished the investigation. They haven't charged anyone. So why would they want somebody knowing what their partial evidence is. The judge on this, who's a magistrate judge, which is like one notch below a regular federal district judge, not saying that a magistrate judge isn't an important judge, it is, but it's not a high ranking judge. It's not an appellate judge. It's not anyone, you know, big high up in the system. But Reinhart's decided to have some of the affidavit released. And I think that seems to be he's thinking a lot about public perception and whether this is viewed as fair. And I think it's odd that at this stage he's worried about public perception. I know it's a big case and it's unusual and it's unprecedented. So people doing unprecedented things is not weird because, I mean, it's just, we've never been in this territory before. So I'm not slamming the judge. I'm just saying it's kind of unusual.
It is because, again, we understand the importance of it. Everybody does. But we're all supposed to be equal under the law, and there should not be not just any special treatment, but frankly, any special handling of the case. You either believe right in the way that you are handling things or you don't. And if you wouldn't typically, you know, release even a redacted affidavit in this, in previous cases, why would you do it just in this one? Now, obviously, there are serious national security concerns, which might lead people to say, well, we should at least get a sense for what prompted this. My concern, and I will admit it's a bit naive, but I'm going to put it out there anyway, is, you know, no matter how much they redact, I know how smart people like you are and a whole ton of other journalists and frankly, other political operatives, and they can retract, you know, that FBI agent, you know, Jim Johnson, and they can even, retract the date or whatever. But, you know, if they put in there the Burger King at Constitution and K Street, somebody's going to know, hey, I know which FBI agent goes there every day.
Right.
And again, I know that sounds a bit naive, but frankly, I don't know that any breadcrumbs are really warranted to be putting on the trail right now.
Well, that's the funny thing. I mean, I've been involved in redacted documents that were released to the news media where somebody did them technically wrong and we were able to remove them. We would, you know, they coded them wrong. There were the black bars over the lines. And when we, you know, copied the file, we were able to remove the redactions. And that was embarrassing. And that kind of thing happens. And also, even really smart people make mistakes. And so I could see there's always the potential. And this is why the feds, you know, aren't real excited about, you know, releasing stuff like this, is because something could get out that they didn't realize that could affect the case. Now, I think that the Trump people, Team Trump would probably be happy for the affidavit to get out because maybe it would give them hints to who they're going after so that they can try to intimidate witnesses, which is something that they like to do as well.
Let's go ahead.
No, the thing that just really amuses me or just leaves me gobsmacked about this case is how many different explanations for why this happened there are. First, they're, you know, fake. They were planted documents. Then they was okay because they're no longer confidential because he declared them all, you know, which is also an irrelevant case. They keep on bringing up things that have nothing to do with anything to try to suggest that stealing documents from the White House and refusing to give them up for more than a year after they're being demanded by the National Archives and the Department of Justice is somehow okay. And clearly it's not. And, you know, Pat, the other thing that I was thinking about this yesterday, I was thinking about the whole search of Mar-a-Lago. And then I thought, well, what were we doing a month ago? A month ago, we didn't even know about about Mar-a-Lago and the records. We were thinking that Donald Trump definitely deserved to go to prison because he had incited a coup that had led to deaths. He had that an attempt to overthrow democracy, to fake electors, in an attempt to fake the election. He'd committed treason before we knew anything about this search warrant stuff.
Before that makes the documents that, you know, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg had might look like small potatoes by the time we're done figuring this out.
So it's one of those things where I mean, this is my personal opinion. Nobody's been tried or anything like that, or even Trump hasn't even been charged. But just based on the evidence we have in front of us, there are multiple reasons why he should be in prison. Mm-hmm. Multiple reasons. I mean, you take one reason, throw it out. There's another reason. There's and what's going on in Atlanta about the with the investigation of of trying to overturn that election, which we have him on audio tape saying, suggesting to the Secretary of State that he go find 11,000 votes that didn't exist. And I mean, that's vote fraud. That's election fraud. The guy should be in prison. And it's come to the point now where I feel like there's so much evidence against him. And there's probably a lot of evidence we don't even know, that it's become a test of our system of justice. If he does, I mean, if this guy can get away with this much outrageous conduct, this many crimes, then how, why should we believe in our system of justice?
And that's why, and this might be a little too personal, and I don't want to get any people of faith upset with me. All I'm saying is everything that's happened since then and what he and others have been able to do without facing accountability. If ever somebody makes the case, are we just living in a simulation? This does it, because I got to feel the simulation is, how much more can we put in here? How much more injustice or unfairness before you just finally crack? Because again, we're still waiting on his taxes, for goodness sakes, you know?
Right. Which that's been like, what, 5 years or something like that.
Yes.
And I also think about that woman in Texas who had a criminal record and voted and didn't realize she couldn't vote. You know, and has spent years in prison for a mistake, for not understanding the voting system in something that ultimately, as it turned out, didn't hurt anyone.
Right.
And yet you have the ex-president of the United States, you know, stealing records of extremely, you know, top secret information and refusing to give them back. And that guy is playing golf today. I mean, come on.
Right.
How unfair can the system be and for us to tolerate?
Mark Jacob joins us now, and we're talking about some of the headlines of the week and how media has covered it. And I think I know the answer to this, but I feel like I need to ask anyway. And I'm probably going to ask it every week and every chance I get. Were there any instances this week where a prominent Republican stepped in front of some cameras and microphones and said, I've seen enough, I believe this guy did something wrong, or I would like to see some, or has it been once again 100% unanimity with everybody on the same talking point, or actually talking points, that, you know, it was the FBI's fault, blah blah blah. Are we aware of any Republicans that kind of changed their tune this week?
No, I'm not. The only two prominent Republicans I can think of who have really spoken out, at least lawmakers, are Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, and neither one of them is going to be in the next Congress. And so it just seems like this whole collection of cowardly behavior where, you know, they know, Pat, that's the thing that drives me nuts about this, is these are not stupid people. Many of them have advanced degrees. They have professional, you know, qualifications. They are smart people. They know this is all BS. They know that the big lie is a lie. They are simply decided that they've chosen their own ambitions over country and their party over country. They've simply decided that this is what it takes for them to get ahead, to have a nice, you know, chauffeur driven trip to the airport and to be invited to all the good parties, and that when they get out of service to get, you know, hired by some lobbyist that contributed to their campaign. They have simply decided that their own personal ambition is way more important than our country.
And for that, they have to stay in power, but to stay in power or get back into the majority rather means that they're going to have what people thought initially was going to be a successful November. Now it's not quite so clear. So let me put it to you this way. Which do you think concerns Republicans more after this week? Herschel Walker running in Georgia, or the results of the special election in New York 19 this week?
New York 19. I mean, all that matters is winning. The funny thing is that they're not even pretending that it matters what they're winning for, what they're going to. That's a thing. And again, just to be really clear, I think I've mentioned this before. I'm the child of Goldwater supporters. It's not like I came out of some sort of communist cult. I have watched the Republican Party for a long time, and they have gone to the dark side. It is a very disappointing thing to see that what they used to call values, they don't care about anymore. You look what happened in Arizona with Blake Masters scrubbing his website to make it seem as if he's not more anti-abortion. he's seen what's happened. He sees what the public is doing. So, and he sees what happened in Kansas also. And Republicans are scared to death about the Roe versus Wade issue, and they should be.
Well, they should be. And this week's results only further bear that out. Mark Jacob is our guest. We're going to take a break. On Monday, Senator Jeff Smith, State Senate candidate Kelly Westland. And if you want to send us a note, send it to radio@upnorthnewswi.com. We'll be back.
25-0624. Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Hey, here's the good news. The Brewers didn't lose yesterday. Now they play the Cubs for three games at American Family Field over the weekend. Mark Jacob joins us from Chicago, talking about this week's headlines. And as we talk about how the media covers things, Mark, I really want to single out. I mean, last week we talked about Brian Stelter losing his show at CNN, Margaret Sullivan no longer having her column. There was also the example earlier this week of Jim Acosta showing how you're supposed to interview a liar. Maybe we'll come to that. But I really want to lead with what the Cleveland Plain Dealer did in refusing to cover an event with J.D. Vance and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. And explaining so in an editorial and putting a white box with an X through it to show where the news copy might have been. And I hope, or I wonder if that struck you as refreshing as it did me.
Yeah, it did. And unfortunately, so very rare. So what the Cleveland Plain Dealer did was simply refuse to cover it based on the conditions that were set by J.D. Vance, which were ridiculous. It was that all video be shared with the campaign. They were seeking to vet who they talked to. There was all kinds of, I mean, Pat, you may remember all the specifics more than me, but it.
Yeah, that they couldn't talk to any attendees without permission. They couldn't go to a hotel room for interviews. They could use any of their video in promotional material. Right. Just ridiculous stuff.
Yeah. And it was, and this is how they treated the free press. The Plain Dealer was just trying to cover it as a news story. And so the Plain Dealer rightly said no. And one of the dirty little secrets of journalism is that a lot of news media over the years have knuckled under to demands like this. They have, in order to get interviews, they've agreed to leave subjects, out of bounds, or they've cut deals with people in order to get the access. This is a huge problem in journalism today, and it's how politicians often manipulate the news media to get their way. And so it was very refreshing to see the Plain Dealers not only refuse to do it, but also go public with it. And they, what I read was that they had a place in their newspaper where they just had a blank spot where they said, this is where the story would have gone if we would have covered it, if they would have let the free press do what the free press does. And then they explained why. And I don't know how that affects regular people who don't know how journalism works. Maybe they don't care. Maybe they don't understand it. Maybe they think everyone does it and Plain Dealer's being ridiculous. But what's really going on here is this is the free press trying to remain free and trying to remain independent and trying to not knuckle under to what politicians want and not to become subservient, to become parts of campaign by sharing your video with them. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's also not a free enterprise system when you think about it.
Right.
That's the Republican Party trying to subordinate the news media into something that is at the whim of politicians.
Exactly. Now, with the usual caveat, Sunday is one of the more frustrating days of the week for journalists who aren't working in Sunday morning TV, because the journalists working on Sunday morning TV can sometimes be rather maddening. Who they book, whether they do follow-ups, etc. You noted on Sunday. And here's the disclaimer, CNN should not be putting known liars on their show, but you did give credit to Jim Acosta for not letting, Chad Wolf, just get away with things and showing at least if you're going to book somebody, here's what you do.
Yeah. Well, the thing about it, and the real master of this is Kellyanne Conway. She's just been, and here's the technique. It's that you keep on talking and keep on talking and keep on talking until someone stops you from talking. And that means that you say sentences, and then right after that one sentence, you say the next sentence, and then you say the next sentence, and then you say, and you never leave a gap where somebody could actually bring in and talk, and you just talk and talk and talk and talk. And if you're Kellyanne Conway, you say a lie, and then you say another lie, and then you say the next lie, and then you say another lie before someone can interrupt you, and then you say another lie, and then you say another lie. And then if the host finally gets a word in edgewise, they're not going to be able to remember the fifth lie back that you said and debunk it. And this is a brilliant technique that Kellyanne Conway has refined, and people like Chad Wolf and other guests on media have also picked it up. And so it was very good to see Acosta, who's one of the best at this, interrupt just right in the middle of a sentence. Chad Wolf says something outrageous and just completely dishonest, and Acosta just stops him, just interrupts him in the middle of the sentence. Now,
it reminds me of when Chuck Todd finally got so exasperated with Ron Johnson and just finally had to blurt out, almost like, "Senator Johnson," just to get him to stop talking and point out before he got two or three more, you know, things strung out there to come back to.
But this is why one of the problems in news media today is news media being too polite and being too nice to their guests.
Yes.
Because, and you see this on NPR a lot, I got to say, where you know, they ask someone a question, they give the answer and it's a lie. Then they ask their next question with no follow-up. And then at the end of the interview, they say, "Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciated you coming on the air with us." And they should say, "To lie to our readers or to our viewers." And anyway, so they're just too nice to people. Sometimes you have to really break bad on them. You have to say, "Wait a second, that's not true." And you have to also have to have the receipts. You have to have done enough prep to where you can anticipate what lies they're going to tell this time, and you have the facts to interrupt them. And this goes back to the access thing we were talking about before. If you keep on doing that to guests, you're going to have fewer right-wing guests going on. I mean, I'm not just saying that only right-wing people lie. Some left-wing people lie too. I'm just saying that in today's world, and this is me watching, trying to be objective in news media for 40 years and watching the way things work, in today's world, Republicans lie a lot more than Democrats. They just do. And this is not me being a Democrat. I'm not a Democrat. I'm an independent. And I've been watching it a long time, and things have really gotten bad with the Republican Party, and they have become a party that lies just out of habit. That's what they do. I mean, they'd rather lie than tell the truth because it's more comfortable to them. And so if you start calling out their lies in real time, right to their face, they're going to stop going on the air with you in a lot of cases. And then you have the access problems, and you have you have trouble filling your air time.
You and I both know we don't believe that, because even if they don't come on live, there's no reason why you can't roll tape from their appearance on Fox News or Newsmax or whatever.
Exactly.
and then break it down that way.
Right. And you can get their side in, mm-hmm. in a fair factual context. Right. That's the thing. Some people say, "Well, if you're going to like call Republicans liars, you're not being fair." No, you're being fair to the viewers.
Right.
You're being fair to the people who matter, the public. And you can't, but you can get their side in. If they have an argument, let them make it. And if it's a lie, debunk it. But that's fairness. That's fairness is letting all valid factual arguments get in there. But when you're just amplifying lies, you're really not helping anyone but the liars.
And that was really the meat of Margaret Sullivan's final column for the Washington Post, was a plea to not cover so much live and in real time, because even if you think you can correct the record in real time, you can't. You can't keep up. Better to be delayed, you know, for whatever little period it takes to say, okay, now we're going to play what they said, but you know, here's where they're not being truthful. And you and I both know that's a very tall order, because the moment Network A says we're going to do that, Network B starts running promos, the only place where you'll find an event live and unfiltered.
Right. Oh no, that's the thing. That's the reason why sometimes this competition between media is not is not healthy for democracy. Is when it does that. I would have like, we do remember pop-up videos.
I love pop-up videos. I would love a newscast that was just pop-up videos.
That's what I think. I don't know why no one's done that.
I know.
Because I think that would be brilliant, you know, and but that would require, you know, a team of people in real time debunking stuff. But it could be done. I mean, and you know, someone says something and you just, or you do it on like a 5-minute delay to where you can do the research that's necessary.
No, I used to talk about that working at TV13 in Eau Claire, and pop-up videos was a thing. And I think part of it is we got spoiled by having Jon Stewart on The Daily Show, being able to do it, you know, to a camera. But there's no reason why somebody can't create a daily broadcast like that.
I would like to see that.
I would too. A lot of what we've been calling a lie is what Joe Biden would call malarkey. And Joe Biden's been on a roll this week to the point, and we spoke earlier about how the White House Twitter account yesterday just had an endless stream of examples of people criticizing the student loan debt forgiveness who also had their PPP loans forgiven or had some other favor done to them and were being absolutely hypocritical. It's led to, obviously, it's been a good couple of weeks here for the Biden administration with the Inflation Reduction Act and all of that. And it's led to the whole, and again, we're in a media world, so media creations come up, the whole theme of Dark Brandon. And the Dark Brandon memes and things like that. And I have to say, I'm this old purist, and you'd think I'd be kind of bothered by all this. And in that particular case, I think I always like seeing somebody's negative imagery thrown back on them. The example I always lead with is that it was Chicago Bears fans that, you know, had a derogatory name for Packers fans, cheeseheads. We took it. We loved it. Now you've got the same thing happening with Dark Brandon. I think it's kind of refreshing. Maybe you think it's childish and unnecessary, but.
Well, you know, but it's that kind of era. And there's no reason why. I mean, we're only talking about the survival of democracy. We don't need to get too serious. You know, we can actually have a little fun, and we can still be people. That's the thing, you know, Pat, that I always felt like, you know, as I say, I'm not a Democrat, I'm an independent. And I always thought Democrats were too serious. And I thought that sometimes they lacked a sense of humor. And frankly, Rush Limbaugh, who I think is pretty kind of a disease on the landscape, or was when he was alive, one of the things he figured out was that you could have some fun and that you could be amusing and that it would work for you politically. And so I like to see Democrats do kind of feisty things. I like Fetterman's social media in Pennsylvania, for example. And there were some people who really criticized the White House yesterday when they did that kind of, you know, is this you? Well, look, your PPP loan, you know, was forgiven. Mm-hmm. Why weren't you complaining about that? And we're talking about people like Matt Gaetz and Green and people like that, whose loans were forgiven. And there's some people who criticize the White House and saying, no, that's not fair, and they're really not the same thing and all that stuff. Well, the whole point was, it wasn't that nobody thought that their PPP loans should be forgiven. I think that the Biden administration was in favor of PPP loans to help people in the middle of a pandemic, to help businesses keep employees. And if they did retain those employees, then those loans would be forgiven. So nobody's saying that that's a bad idea. They're just pointing out the hypocrisy. And the fact that Republicans will use any kind of thing like that helps anyone as some sort of opportunity to criticize.
And hypocrisy, while it is the right word, the other word that I think applies well here is perspective. The White House Twitter account was putting things in perspective, and it's the same thing we're trying to do at Up North News, and we think that more journalists should be doing is just put things in perspective. That to me is the polar opposite of stenography.
Right. And well, and this thing, the White House thing yesterday, the reason I think it was refreshing to a lot of people who are, you know, against, who are trying to defend democracy right now, is that we felt like, at least I felt like Biden was being too nice to the Republicans. I'm talking about the MAGA Republicans. I'm talking about the ones who clearly were trying to overturn fair elections and do all these other things. And him saying that Biden saying that Mitch McConnell was his friend, for example. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just that made me want to just scream. I mean, Mitch McConnell, who stole a Supreme Court seat, if not two. And, you know, and this is those are not your friends. McConnell was the person who, like, that's why Trump is not, you know, well, that's why Trump finished his term, was allowed to, was because Mitch McConnell protected him in the Ukraine scandal.
And so if Joe Biden wants to continue to be friends with Mitch McConnell, that's fine. But it just means he has to let Dark Brandon out every now and then. Mark Jacob, thanks so much. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Again, if you want to reach us here, radio at upnorthnewswi.com. We'll wrap up this hour's conversation in just a bit. You're Up North. Telling you folks, listening on the radio is great, but you're catching us during the commercial breaks. You're watching the wheels turn in Luke's head when I tell him I've got a story about flip-flops, and he comes up with exactly that. This coming from the great J.R. Ross at WispPolitics.com and the team there. We have spoken before about the flip-flops of Republican gubernatorial candidate Tim Michaels. It's been a few days. We were due for another, and here it is. Tim Michaels initially said that he was going to limit donations to $500 because, you know, he didn't want to have to be beholden to anybody. He said that right to the camera in his TV ads. And then the moment the primary was over, he started accepting donations up to the maximum of $20,000, which there's just no other way to put it, was his way of saying, I can buy the primary, you know, with $10 million or so of my own money. But now I can turn around that I'm the nominee and ask for the big bucks. Okay, fine. So he flipped on $500 limits going up to $20,000. But he was still saying, and let's see, I grabbed some screen captures on my phone thinking that I heard that this might be happening. So let me get to these. These are actual headlines. This is from WMTV, Channel 15 in Madison. Michaels runs as an outsider. This is the one. Oh, here's a Michaels post. I'm the only candidate refusing special interest PAC and lobbyist money. Hashtag not beholden. Here's one from the Milwaukee Journal. Tim Michaels says he'll refuse PAC money, casts himself as an outsider candidate in the field for governor. Here's one that came from the Michaels campaign taking a shot at Rebecca Clefish. It says Tim Michaels is refusing special interest PAC and lobbyist contributions. And it shows a graph of Michaels with zero PAC dollars and Rebecca Clefish at nearly $110,000, a big difference in, you know, what they're taking from PACs. Now we get to the J.R. Ross article from this morning. Tim Michaels' running mate for Lieutenant Governor, Roger Roth, accepting PAC contributions while running mate Michaels bans them. Roth, a state senator from Appleton, who is now the Lieutenant Governor nominee, hosted a fundraiser in Madison Wednesday, and it featured Tim Michaels as the special guest, according to an invitation obtained by WispPolitics.com. Along with the event, which listed donations of $12,000 to be a host and $2,500 per person, the fundraiser also included a $26,000 private host roundtable event option. The maximum PAC contribution to a candidate for lieutenant governor is $26,000. And Roth advisor Matt Henkel said Roth's campaign is accepting such contributions. Now, it is true that the lieutenant governor candidates run separately from the governor in the primaries. You know, there's not a running mate. You don't choose somebody to be your lieutenant governor running mate. But after the primary, you're pretty well joined at the hip. And so even though Tim Michaels is saying he's not taking PAC contributions, if all those PACs that want him to be governor donate instead to his running mate, is he holding true to his promise not to accept it? No. What am I thinking about? No, it's you.
I was going to say, what took so long for that answer? What were you bemoaning in your head?
I was looking for anything that would give that dramatic pause any significance whatsoever. And the answer is no, it's just a straight up flip flop. There's just no other way around it. And so we have to add to the list, flip-flopping on whether you embrace the Donald Trump endorsement or not, have it on your website or not, want to overturn the will of the voters in 2020 or not, abolish the Wisconsin Elections Commission or not, accept limits of $500 or not, and now accept contributions from political action committees or not. And I have said before, and I hold to this, I think there is one more big flip-flop coming. He is right now holding fast to saying that the 1849 abortion ban language, you know, mirrors his position, his word, mirrors. I think at some point he sees the writing on the wall and tries to do what Mark Jacob was talking about, a candidate in Arizona who has now scrubbed the most extreme abortion language from their website and is talking like a moderate. Again, as if there's no, as if they don't know the internet lasts forever and that people do have memories. And I get that you're trying to fool some of the people most of the time, you know, people that did not know you had such an extreme position and you're trying to convince them. You're just one of them. You're moderate, you're centrist, you're independent, whatever the case may be. But eventually that extreme position you took is going to get out there. It's just a matter of whether it gets out there enough to overcome all of the spending you're trying to do, millions and millions of dollars in spending, now with the aid of PAC money, to convince people otherwise. And I think Luke, you doubted me on this, but I still think at some point Michaels is going to say, you know, what I meant was, you know, and give a moderate position and say, I don't know how you people could have misunderstood me. That's really, you know, where I'm at on this.
I'm not going to rule it out, Pat, but I don't know if he's going to do it, because I think the only reason Blake Masters in Arizona is doing that is because a new poll came out showing that he was 10, and it was a conservative poll from what I understand. Conservative poll in Arizona said that Blake Masters was 10 points behind current incumbent U.S. Senator Mark Kelly. And unless there's like some polling or something writing on the walls at that campaign headquarters that there is indication that that is how far behind the Michaels camp is, and his feelings, he feels like he's 10 points ahead. So I don't know if he's going to take that flip-flop.
Yes, he says in his heart, yeah, he believes he's 5 to 10 points ahead. Well, hey, buddy, how are we supposed to doubt that, you know, conviction? Never mind the polls. You feel like you're 5 to 10 points ahead.
I feel like the big flip-flop that's going to come is we're going to find out that he truly, you know, doesn't live in Wisconsin. I have a feeling there's going to be some tax documents or something that come out. And
well, that's the other thing. Well, from tax purposes, he has said, he's been weirdly specific, saying, I have spent at least 183 days living in Wisconsin for 8 of the past 9 years. That's one of the more unusual statistics you're ever going to hear somebody brag about. But for tax purposes and for voting purposes, he has come out and said that. But you're right in that it will not surprise me, especially given that other groups were able to track down the private jet usage of Senator Ron Johnson, by and large to Florida, but just private jet use overall, because, you know, why would you sit with the little people? I am a little surprised that at this point we haven't heard anything, but it was pretty late in the campaign 4 years ago that I believe it was One Wisconsin Now that first found the records showing the way that Scott Walker was using a private plane for sometimes political purposes, sometimes personal purposes.
For a haircut.
Using your tax money this way. And so for Tim Michaels to, again, want to be the swarthy, I forgot to shave again, you know, a blue-collar guy who is just like you, except I just, you know, want to build a fence around Wisconsin because it'll make Donald Trump happy. I just don't see that that's going to withstand scrutiny over the final weeks of this general election campaign. Take a break. Have more in our next hour. You're up north. Stand over by.